You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Hebrew scripture has a lot of rules, and in many cases, they served as rudimentary public health policies. And that's definitely the situation with rules about leprosy, which went beyond what we'd call leprosy today, or Hansen's disease, and covered a wide variety of contagious diseases and skin conditions. If any of you are in the medical profession, you can check out Leviticus 13 and 14 to confirm what are basically common sense guidelines on how to deal with skin problems. Without the medical options we take for granted today, if you wanted to protect your whole village from illness, it made sense to quarantine anyone with a rash or sore until it had healed, which, according to our passage in Leviticus, was usually 7 days or 2 weeks. After the pandemic, the benefits of quarantining the sick is not something any of us need to be reminded of. In Jesus' day, the local priest served as the public health official who pronounced the quarantine over. Now, not all diseases the biblical audience would lump in with leprosy were permanent. And since it was assumed that the lepers were being punished for their sins, it was also assumed that their sores or rash would last as long as they deserved punishment for whatever it was that they'd done. So our story opens with Jesus on his way to Jerusalem. As he enters a village, he is confronted by 10 lepers. While maintaining their distance, our story unfolds as they shout to Jesus, "Have mercy on us!"
Our words of wisdom are from Luke chapter 17, verses 11 through 19.
It happened that as Jesus made his way toward Jerusalem, he crossed over the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered a village, 10 men, all lepers, met him. They kept their distance, but raised their voices, calling out,
"Jesus, Master, have mercy on us."
Taking a good look at them, he said,
"Go, show yourselves to the priests."
They went, and while still on their way, became clean. One of them, when he realized that he was healed, turned around and came back shouting his gratitude, glorifying God. He kneeled at Jesus' feet, so grateful. He couldn't thank him enough, and he was a Samaritan. Jesus said,
"Were not 10 healed? Where are the 9? Can none be found to come back and give glory to God except this outsider?"
Then he said to him,
"Get up, on your way. Your faith has healed and saved you."
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
There's an old proverb that says, if you've forgotten the language of gratitude, you'll never be on speaking terms with happiness. And what do you know? This isn't just some pie-in-the-sky, fluffy proverb. Gratitude, it turns out, literally makes you happier and healthier. Scientific studies have shown conclusively that the expression of gratitude can have profound and positive effects on your health, on your mood, and the satisfaction level in your relationships. Dr. Robert Emmons is a professor of psychology at UC Davis and a leading scientific expert on the science of gratitude. His studies have proven that the practice of gratitude can have dramatic and observable, measurable effects on a person's health, including lowering blood pressure, improving immune function, reducing the risk of depression and substance abuse, and it lowers your A1C. In the long run, grateful people engage in more exercise. They have better dietary habits. They're less likely to smoke and abuse alcohol, and are generally more healthy than people who don't practice intentional gratitude. Now, if you really want to drill down on the neuroscience, and I know you do, you can check out Dan Baker's book, What Happy People Know. Baker points out that it is physically impossible for the brain to be in a state of appreciation and a state of fear at the same time. The two states may alternate back and forth, but they are mutually exclusive. Why? Because during active appreciation, threatening messages from your amygdala and anxious instincts from the primal depths of your brainstem are absolutely cut off from access to your brain's neocortex. However, no gratitude means fear and anxiety are left to fester and take over your neocortex, making you a very unpleasant person to be around. Take, for instance, the folks who voted no on the recent school board bond issue here in Fountain Hills. I've got to believe that a number of them were motivated by the sensational street placards and other messaging that literally used the flames of hell as imagery and leveraged fear and mistrust to completely distract the neocortex from the reality of our obligation as fellow citizens. As David Brooks has written in the New York Times, gratitude is a form of social glue. We pay a debt of gratitude forward to another generation who, like us, didn't deserve it. People who got their education, whose lives benefited from the nameless generations who've gone before, all of a sudden pull the ladder up behind them and are convinced that they did it all themselves? So, gratitude helps save us from self-delusion and reminds us that there's no such thing as a self-made person. All that we have is a gift, and any good we represent comes from an amazing, mysterious amalgam of the influences and the blessings of those around us. We have so much. It's hard to comprehend how fortunate we are. And yes, we do have challenges, struggles, and problems in life. But looking at our circumstances in general, we are truly fortunate beyond belief. Our temptation is not only taking it for granted, but looking at others who are less fortunate and somehow thinking that they are less worthy. And that's the zinger in our passage today. This isn't just a simple story about being grateful. Luke is subverting both religious convictions and racist stereotypes. Remember, according to the Deuteronomic Code, the lepers in our story are sick because they deserve it. They're being punished for some sin or other. So, when Jesus initiates the leper's healing, he's undermining what many pious religious folks of his day would consider the will of God. And to top it off, he even includes what, in Jesus' own words, is the worst kind of outsider, worse than even being a leper. He's a Samaritan. And here's where Luke just rubs the salt in a little more. It's a little more oomph in the story that the Greek reveals and English doesn't. In the original Greek, the nine were made clean, katharizo, the same word from which we get the word cathartic, to purged. They were cleansed. But the Samaritan, the one that religious people used as an example of all that was worthless and unrighteous, was made sozo, healed, preserved, saved, made whole. So yeah, this is a simple lesson about gratitude, but that only goes part of the way. The other guys were just purged of an inconvenience. But Jesus says to the Samaritan, your faith, which is a verb, pistis, your action has made you whole. And what was that action? Gratitude. So how do we do it? What are some strategies for practicing gratitude on the way toward wholeness? Well, in what some might say is an unexpected endorsement from academia, studies have shown that people who are committed to a religious community are overall healthier and happier. But not because of religious practices like prayer or belief or feelings about God's love or presence. Instead, satisfaction was tied to the number of close friends that people said they had in their religious congregation and the gratitude they feel for those relationships. But to get more specific, Robert Emmons' UC Davis group discovered some particular practices anyone can try. Keep a gratitude diary. Subjects who kept a daily diary of things they were grateful for just 2 weeks, sustained measurable reductions in stress, blood pressure, and an improved state of mind. And if writing stuff down is too much for you, then just count your blessings, even just once a day. Maybe tie it to meals. I had a spiritual director who swore by tying it to picking up a spoon. Hopefully, whatever the occasion has you picking up a spoon, you can be grateful for that occasion. Thank you letters. And not just for gifts, but for broader circumstances. Bishop Jack Spong used to carry around a stack of note cards in his briefcase, and on the plane ride back home, he'd jot off notes of appreciation to all kinds of folks that he'd encountered on that trip. Writing a letter of gratitude not only reduces feelings of hopelessness and increases levels of optimism for the sender, but it improves the state of mind of the recipient. It's a gift. If you invest in a way of seeing the world that is mean and frustrated, guess what? You're going to get a world that is mean and frustrating. But if you can find any authentic reason to give thanks, anything that is going right with the world or your life, and put your attention there, then statistics say you're going to be better off. Look, gratitude even helps put difficulty in perspective. I look back on my own life and see how, over and over again, it was the most difficult moments, the disappointments, the troubles, the embarrassments that have most profoundly shaped who I am. And I have to be grateful for that. Otherwise, I wouldn't be who I am today. And if a diary or thank you letters or embracing life's difficulties are just too much of a commitment on the road to gratitude, you can try using everyday events as cues for being grateful. How about being grateful for the mess after the party? Because it means you've been surrounded by family and friends. How about being grateful for the taxes you pay? Because it means that you're employed or have resources. Or with Thanksgiving coming up, how about being grateful for the clothes that fit just a little too snug, because it means you have more than enough to eat? How about feeling grateful for the only parking spot being at the far end of the parking lot, because it gives you the opportunity to practice the gift of walking? How about the alarm that you throw across the room when it goes off in the early morning? Because it means you're alive another day. How about being grateful for all of the heartaches, stresses, and frustrations your children and family add to life? Because it means you have the opportunity to hone your relationship skills. Friends, there's a beauty in what we take for granted every day. There's also opportunity in being grateful, not just for the things we receive, but for the opportunities we have to give. Mother Teresa talked about how grateful she was to the people she was helping, the sick and dying in the slums of Calcutta, because they enabled her to grow and deepen her spirituality. Now, that's a very different way of thinking about gratitude. Gratitude for what we can give as opposed to what we receive. In her book, Help Thanks Wow, The Three Essential Prayers, Anne Lamott writes, "Gratitude begins in our hearts and then dovetails into behavior. It almost always makes you willing to be of service, which is where the joy resides. It means that you are willing to stop being such a jerk. When you're aware of all that has been given to you in your lifetime and the past few days, it's hard not to be humbled and pleased to give back." And look, even if life seems to be full of insurmountable challenges and even a thank you seems too much of a challenge, maybe the advice of legendary coach and theologian John Wooden would be a good place to start. Things turn out best for people who make the best of the way things turn out. Back in the 4th century of the Common Era, a group of Christian hermits called the Desert Fathers lived an ascetic life out in the middle of the Egyptian desert. One day, a traveler brought a bunch of grapes to the abbot, Macarius, as a gift. Known for thinking not on his own needs, but the needs of others, Macarius took the grapes to another brother who seemed more feeble. The sick man gave thanks to God for the kindness of his brother, but then he too, thinking more of his neighbor than himself, gifted the grapes to yet another monk, who in turn did the same. So eventually that same bunch of grapes was spirited around to every cave scattered over the desert compound, no one knowing who first had sent it. As it happened, the grapes finally made their way all the way back to Macarius, who gave thanks not only for the grapes, but for the generosity of those with whom he shared his life. Friends, medieval theologian Meister Eckhart wrote, "If the only prayer you say in your whole life is thank you, that would suffice." May we be inspired to practice gratitude, not just this Thanksgiving, but all year round. Our lives are full of more blessings than we can ever begin to count. Be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.